From MainePublic.org, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, November 9th, 2016. And on this day, many Mainers awoke in shock to find that Republican real estate mogul and TV personality Donald Trump is the nation's new president. But others are celebrating what they see as a fresh start. The vote on some of the most contentious of six questions on the Maine ballot is still too close to call, but one was rejected and three others approved. And Maine voters elected a new legislature. We'll tell you how the outcome of those contests might affect the pressing issues facing lawmakers. Those stories and much more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs. And Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at mainegardens.org.
I'm Barbara Caridi. Overall, Maine voters sided with Democrat Hillary Clinton in yesterday's presidential election. But the state's second district voters chose Republican Donald Trump, giving him one of Maine's four electoral votes, a split that's never happened before. While that vote wasn't crucial to Trump's election, it reflected the frustrations of voters nationwide that propelled Trump to victory. Maine State Senator Eric Brakey, a Republican who was reelected Tuesday, said last night that those concerns are real.
I think that Donald Trump is speaking to a lot of the very real frustrations that people have, people who feel disenfranchised. I think that, you know, Bernie Sanders was doing a lot of the same thing to a kind of different group of people that were feeling, I think, a lot of the same problems.
Maine's two U.S. senators, one Republican and one independent, say they will get to work with President-elect Donald Trump to move the nation forward.
I did not predict these results, but I was not completely surprised by them.
That's GOP Senator Susan Collins.
I view Donald Trump as having won this election fair and square, and he is now president of all of us.
Collins, who did not support Trump or Clinton, says she was encouraged by Trump's victory speech.
He made a point to reaching out to everyone in this country and spoke of unifying us. That theme is one that I think our country desperately needs to heal the divisions that have frayed the social fabric of this nation.
Collins says she thinks Congress can find common ground with Trump, especially on the issue of rebuilding the nation's infrastructure. Collins' independent colleague, Angus King, who caucuses with Democrats and supported Hillary Clinton, agrees that infrastructure is an issue of common concern. He says his biggest concern with a Trump presidency, though, is his lack of experience with foreign policy.
In foreign policy, the president has enormous unchecked power. Where to station troops, where to send troops. Of course, in the case of a nuclear confrontation, the ultimate authority with no checks and balance whatsoever. That is a huge responsibility, and that's an area that I really hope Mr. Trump will take a deep breath, talk to some people, talk to some of the leaders in our military, and really get a handle on what the implications are.
Both senators said they hope to work with the new president to reform the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's signature health care legislation. But Donald Trump vowed that on his first day in office, he'll ask Congress to repeal the act. That puts insurance coverage for 20 million Americans, including 84,000 Mainers, into question. Trump also promised to implement reforms that will make health care more affordable, broaden access, and improve quality. But as Patty White reports, some health care advocates in Maine question whether the president-elect's proposals will actually fulfill those promises.
According to Trump's website, no one should have to buy health insurance if they don't want to, so he plans to eliminate the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate. But that proposal, says Consumer for Affordable Healthcare's Emily Brostek, would only drive up premiums.
I know Donald Trump has also said that he believes that that people shouldn't be excluded from health coverage because of pre-existing conditions. And it's a little hard to see how those things hang together.
Because insurance companies need healthy members to balance the cost of sick members. Trump also pledges to make insurance more affordable by allowing individuals to deduct premiums on their tax returns. Brostek says that would be a change from the current subsidies that are available when insurance is purchased on the online marketplace.
Which, you know, we have concerns about because there are a lot of people who can't afford to wait until the end of the year at tax time to get that money back, and which is why the advance tax credit through healthcare.gov has worked so well.
The uncertain future of the ACA under Trump also has Maine's insurance co-op concerned. But Community Health Options Director of Communications Michael Gendreau says the co-op plans to provide health coverage for the long term.
And we have had a few people ask us, well, what does it mean for us? But I think despite, you know, all that we've heard about repealing the Affordable Care Act or dismantling it, whatever language one wants to use, that the legislative process ahead will is not something that's going to be like a faucet where the ACA simply turned off one day.
With Republicans in control of both houses of Congress, Trump could have the political power necessary to make major changes to the Affordable Care Act. But Maine Independent Senator Angus King says he hopes the direction will be reform versus repeal.
I would hate to see us just say, well, the heck with those 20 million people who now have health insurance that didn't have it before. They're going to be on their own.
Republican Senator Susan Collins says President Obama has been resistant to opening up the health care law to changes, but the Trump presidency offers a new opportunity.
Of Republicans working with Democrats to try to fix Obamacare, and there's a lot to fix. There are also provisions in the law that enjoy widespread support.
Those include allowing kids to stay on their parents' insurance until age 26, says Collins, as well as prohibiting insurance companies from discriminating against those with pre-existing conditions. But one other area of uncertainty under Trump is Medicaid. He wants to convert it to a block grant, which Robin Merrill of Maine Equal Justice Partners says would reduce access to health care.
By block granting Medicaid, you know, it restricts there's a certain amount of funding that goes to states. States have more flexibility to put, you know, more restrictions in place and make it harder for people to access health care.
It's also unclear whether Medicaid expansion will remain an option for states. Maine Equal Justice Partners is part of a coalition that launched a campaign this fall to put the question of expanding Medicaid on the 2018 ballot in Maine. For now, says Merrill, that option is still in play. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Meanwhile, Maine First District voters, as expected, re-elected incumbent Democrat Shelley Pingree to a fifth term, while voters in the second district sent Republican Bruce Poliquin back to Congress for another two-year term, helping the U.S. House retain its Republican majority. Poliquin defeated Democratic challenger Emily Kane in a campaign that broke all state spending records for a U.S. House race. More than $15 million was spent by the candidates and allied outside interests in a nonstop television ad campaign. Shortly after midnight, Poliquin stepped to the microphone at Dysart's restaurant in Bangor and delivered the message his supporters had been waiting to hear.
We have a new rule we're starting tonight. For the next 2 years, during my second term, whenever I see the folks that I work for, because the folks in the second district are my customers, we work for you. I would please appreciate it if you don't call me Congressman, just call me Bruce.
Today, Emily Kane closed up her Bangor headquarters, formally ending her second bid against Poliquin. In hindsight, Kane believes she ran the best campaign she could. And some observers say Kane was hurt by other issues on the ballot. A.J. Higgins has more.
Nearly $16 million later, the dust has cleared over the 2nd District, where 2 years ago, Kane lost to Poliquin by 5 percentage points. This time around, Kane ran a more aggressive campaign and lost by 10 points. But Kane says she has no regrets over how she staged her campaign.
I am 100% glad that I ran again, and I am 100% sure we did everything we could. We ran the best ads. We had a strong message. Ultimately, we didn't win, and sometimes that happens.
Well, whenever you lose, it's very easy to say something should have been different, and, you know, obviously there's a case for that here.
Amy Freed, A political science professor at the University of Maine says Kane actually did improve her standing in some communities, but that there was little she could do to hold back the wave of conservative support for presidential candidate Donald Trump. And Fried says Kane was also hurt by voters who turned out to oppose a ballot question crafted to close private gun sale loopholes.
I would think that Poliquin benefited both from the presidential race and from question three in particular.
But Congressman Bruce Poliquin says one of the things Kane should have done was to discourage outside organizations from spending millions in television ads that he says sought to discredit him.
Appalled by the millions and millions of dollars spent on false, negative, nasty personal attack ads against me.
Kane counters that her supporters had no choice but to fight back against what she described as the Wall Street attacks on her campaign by a multimillionaire. It's an example, she says, of why campaign finance reform should be a top agenda item for the next Congress. As for Kane's next steps, Fried says she could learn something from the way 1st District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree responded to her loss for a U.S. Senate seat 15 years ago. Pingree left politics to assume the helm of Common Cause, a liberal political advocacy group, before winning election to her current office.
If she would do that sort of thing, you know, perhaps at some point in the future she would be able to run again, but I think she needs to take some time away.
Kane says she plans to take some time to consider her next move. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Meanwhile, Maine voters weighed in on several ballot issues. Question one would legalize recreational marijuana, but at this hour, the vote is still too close to call. The Yes on One campaign, nonetheless, declared victory last night. But as Susan Sharon reports, opponents are refusing to concede.
With 97% of precincts reporting, the Yes on One campaign is leading by about 3,500 votes. And for opponents, that's just too close to call. Scott Gagner is with the group Mainers Protecting Our Youth and Communities, which is not ready to throw in the towel quite yet. Gagner says, in addition to an already close margin, his campaign has become aware of several thousand ballots that have not yet been counted, including 2,700 absentee ballots in Scarborough that may not have been included in that town's final tally.
That's important for us because, as of now, Scarborough is sort of in our win column. We're also learning from the Secretary of State's office that some of the overseas ballots from service members have also not been counted, and that could be up to 4,000 ballots that have yet to be added.
At this point, Gagner says unless the results swing dramatically in favor of the yes vote, his group is leaning heavily toward asking for a recount. Meanwhile, supporters of recreational marijuana legalization have already declared victory. They gathered on the steps of Portland City Hall Wednesday morning to remind voters that it will take at least a year to implement regulations for retail sales. David Boyer is the campaign manager for Yes on One.
And ideally, marijuana will be legally sold in stores January 1st, 2018.
Woo!
That's a great goal, and we're going to shoot for that.
Boyer says regulations could include requirements for childproof packaging for marijuana edibles that appeal to children, along with a prohibition on certain types of candy. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Meanwhile, question two, which would impose a tax surcharge on higher income earners to fund education, is also too close to call at this hour. But voters did reject ballot question three, which would have expanded background checks on gun sales. David Trahan, director of the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine, says he thinks voters resented interference by a gun control group founded by New York billionaire Michael Bloomberg. And he says they particularly disliked a provision in the measure that could bar loaning or giving a gun to a friend without getting a federal background check.
Generally, when you talk to people, they like the idea of background checks on sales. And I think that's right. I think that had this been drafted differently, you probably wouldn't have seen as much opposition. It would have been more difficult to defend. But that's not what happened.
But voters did endorse hiking Maine's minimum wage by a solid margin. The measure will boost the current $7.50 an hour minimum wage to $12 an hour by 2020. Amy Halstead, the campaign manager for Mainers for Fair Wages, says with the passage of question four, workers in Maine will finally get an honest day's pay for an honest day's work.
people who have believed, as we do, that in order for the American dream to be real, if you work 40 hours a week, you should be able to take home enough to support yourself and your family.
But Greg Dougal of the Maine Restaurant Association says Question 4 plunges the restaurant industry into uncharted territory because it eliminates the tip credit. That's what allows employers to pay tipped employees half the minimum wage in order to offset earnings and tips. Starting next year, tipped workers will get annual increases until their base pay matches the adjusted minimum wage.
The actual cost of the elimination of the tip credit for a average restaurant in Maine is going to cost about $180,000 over the time frame that this actually occurs.
Dougal says the Restaurant Association will explore options to reinstate the tip credit. And Maine has become the first state in the nation to adopt a new election system called ranked choice voting. With the passage of Question 5, the new system will be used to elect legislative, congressional, and gubernatorial candidates. But the final implementation of ranked choice voting could face additional challenges and possibly another vote by Mainers. Steve Missler has our story.
It took just a few hours after their landmark victory for the Maine ranked choice voting campaign to again find itself making national news. Pundits and progressives, crestfallen by the stunning outcome of the presidential race, wondered if the results would have been different if Americans could only rank the candidates in order of preference and elect a president with a majority, not just a plurality. And they looked to Maine, where the Associated Press has called the race for supporters of Question 5 to consider the possibilities. Maine is the first state to take ranked choice voting this far. The effort here might spread to other states, but first, state officials have to implement this dramatic overhaul of the election system, and that might not be so easy.
Ranked choice voting will get struck down by the courts. I'm very confident because the Constitution says one person, one vote. Ranked choice voting says you vote several times, you just rank them.
That was Governor Paul LePage addressing an audience in Sanford over the summer. The governor didn't quite pinpoint the legal question facing ranked choice voting, but other state officials have questioned whether the system is allowed under the Maine Constitution. Maine election officials and Attorney General Janet Mills have both warned that the ballot initiative raises constitutional concerns. There are a couple of issues, but the central one is a part of the Constitution requiring candidates for state and federal offices to be elected with a plurality. It doesn't require a majority, which is the key goal of ranked choice voting.
So, you know, at some point, could someone challenge this law, as they could any law, whether it's passed by the legislature or the people? Certainly.
Kyle Bailey, the campaign manager for Question 5, acknowledges that LePage or somebody else could challenge the law in court, but he says other challenges to ranked choice have not succeeded. The system is in place in several major cities, including San Francisco, and smaller ones, like Portland. Bailey says the legal precedent, plus the fact that Question 5 was approved by voters, should win the day in court. And if it doesn't?
It wasn't a recommendation to the state. It was a statute that they were voting on. And they enacted that statute. And our governor, our attorney general, our secretary of state all have an obligation and a responsibility, a duty. It's their privilege to act in support of the will of the people to implement this.
Bailey is alluding to a scenario that could arise if a court rules that the citizen initiative needs a constitutional fix. If that happens, then the legislature will have to pass one with a two-thirds majority in the House and the Senate. Voters would then have to approve it. But LePage, who holds significant sway with House Republicans, could convince lawmakers to block such a change, meaning that the implementation of ranked choice could be delayed. Bailey hopes state officials and lawmakers will carry out the will of voters. And if they do, Maine will begin using ranked choice voting by the 2018 primary election, just in time for the gubernatorial race, and just in time for the battle for the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Angus King, an independent who could benefit from a new system designed to eliminate the possibility of so-called spoiler candidates. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Meanwhile, voters also approved Question 6 on the ballot, which would provide $100 million in bonds for transportation projects, and they chose a new legislature with a very slim majority, 18-17, in the Senate for Republicans, while Democrats retained a majority of 5 seats in the Maine House. Tomorrow, Senate and House Republicans will select their leaders, and when they take office, they'll inherit what their predecessors characterize as some major problems facing the state. Leaders on the Democratic side agree. Mal Leary reports.
Senate President Mike Thibodeau is seeking a second term as president, the first Republican to do that since 1980. He says that in addition to crafting a two-year state budget, lawmakers will have to figure out how to implement voter-approved referenda on marijuana, school taxes and ranked choice voting, and the minimum wage.
There's a lot of work to do regarding the marijuana bill. The minimum wage bill passed, but, it was pretty widely discussed here in the building with folks on both sides of the aisle decrying the fact that it was going to do away with the tip credit. So I expect that there'll be a discussion around that.
House Minority Leader Kim Fredette agrees that lawmakers will have to have a fast start to consider all of the issues. Because of the thin party majority, it will have to be a bipartisan effort.
But I think it is reality. I mean, look, we got a razor-thin majority in the Senate. We got a couple seats short in the House. Reality is if we're going to continue to address the issues and move Maine forward, we are going to have to work together.
Current House Assistant Majority Leader Sarah Gideon, who is seeking her party's nomination for Speaker, says the voter-passed ballot questions will add to what was expected to be a heavy workload to come up with a budget agreement.
We have only one option, and that is sitting down together, looking at this landscape, looking at the things that we have to get done for the state of Maine, for their well-being, for people's safety, and that work has to happen immediately, and it has to happen together.
Gideon expects at least one recount before final numbers are known in the House. She says House Democrats have long planned to hold their organizational meeting to elect leaders on the 18th, and that while she agrees that lawmakers need to move swiftly, that date won't change. Current Senate Assistant Minority Leader Dawn Hill says she has not decided whether to seek a leadership post. Democrats in the Senate meet on Monday to select their leaders, and she says lawmakers will have to push the reset button and put the contentious campaigns behind them.
Before we even consider bills that are being filed, we have all of this referenda coming to us to work on. And so it'll be probably the first order of business to tackle those.
The leaders are trying to downplay any possible partisan political maneuvering as a result of the very close margins in both chambers. There have been speaker and president elections in the past where minority members of the other party or independents were quartered in order to win the two top posts. The actual election of the two presiding officers will occur on December 7th, when the 128th Maine Legislature formally meets for the first time. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And two seats in the Maine House could be affected by the discovery that 2,700 absentee ballots in Scarborough might not have been included in the town's final tally. Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says when town officials went to reconcile the numbers this morning, they found that in the confusion of the early morning hours, they hadn't reconciled the ballot count to make sure that all had been accounted for. Dunlap says under state law, he's given Scarborough officials permission to now reconcile those ballots. Because of the number involved, it could have an impact on the two Scarborough House seats. Dunlap says that review is a public process and it's still underway at this hour. And finally, here's meteorologist Paul Cousins with the forecast.
The first half of November will prove to be unusually mild and exceedingly drier than customary. The jet stream largely confined north of the Canadian border. As far as tonight is concerned, skies become partly cloudy over northern Maine, with the lovely three-quarter moon rising into clearing skies for the majority of the state, mid-20s in the western valleys to the low 30s along the entire coast. Tomorrow will be quiet, cloudy north, filtered sunshine western, central, and down east Maine with a slight risk of a mountain flurry, mostly sunny, Lewiston, Auburn south, 40 north of mountains to the low 50s, Saco south. Friday will be quite windy following a distinct cold front. Snow showers over northern and western Maine will accumulate throughout the mountains. Look for considerable cloudiness over central and down east counties, an even blend of sun and clouds, Portland south, 39 to 53 north to south. Saturday, windy and bright for all but the Quebec border, where the sun will fade somewhat during the afternoon, 38 to 52 north to south. Sunday, warmer, mostly cloudy north with a low risk of a sprinkle, partly cloudy south and breezy. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, November 9th, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to our entire news team for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mainepublic.org. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at Maine Public, thanks for listening.